What?
I was thinking about setting this on here.
Ah, we need to do that.
The knocks on the table.
So we don't have knockers?
I don't know if that's gonna work, but see, it's a little squishy.
You don't have to do that. Whoa.
It's gonna work.
Perfect.
It's gonna fall over.
Fuck, it's not gonna fall over. All right. We're going, by the way. We're 31 seconds in.
Oh, we are.
Yeah.
Man, I didn't have my game face on.
I know. I noticed you were trying to get it on. It was a little scrunchy, and you were doing some adjustments.
It was. It's a little uncomfortable. It's really my game cod piece.
So you can bounce people off your cod?
I don't know what that is for, actually.
It's cod just, pieces?
You know, it helps me get into it a little bit.
They're actually made to hold your stuff, because when you wear a cod piece, you typically don't have pockets.
Oh, that's true.
So you put your stuff in your cod piece.
Okay.
Put your stuff sense. In with your
I always
junk.
I thought it was for cod. But I'm like, why would a fisherman wear that? Just doesn't make any sense to me.
I completely agree.
How do you spell delicious?
Delicious. D-E-L-I-C-I-O-U-S. Not to be confused with wieldy.
Wieldly. Oh, shit.
Right. So Dan's setting up the laptop. Yep. You guys are getting a little piece of the pre-action.
The pre-show here. The pre-show shit.
It's a little pre-spunk for you.
Pre-spunk. The pre-podzor. It happens to the best of us.
Right. Right. No, no, that's the premature podzor.
Oh, okay.
This is pre podzor.
That's why it's important to have toys in the house.
Right.
Okay.
So I did send a couple of links.
That.
Yeah. We're just gonna move on like that never happened.
What episode are we on?
We are on episode 55.
55. So we have no links.
I sent a bunch to Four Podzor.
Four Podzor.
And I never had a chance to organize them into
links for you.
Yes.
There's two.
From Shybeck.
There's two.
Yeah, it's going to be a thin episode.
That's okay.
We say that now, but...
So I don't think we have any upkeep to do for the show. You know, we've been sort of slacking quite a bit. Not as many shows as we used to do and all that jazz, but I'm feeling okay with that.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Well, we've been super busy. The school's keeping us busy.
Yep.
And I just spent the last 4 months of my life killing myself over getting my kitchen ready.
And I want to let Liana know that I appreciate her activity on the forums. I wrote a huge post back to her in one of the forum postings.
Yeah.
And then Firefox crashed on me.
Duh.
Oh, fuck it. It's like redoing the podcast. I just didn't have it in me, you know?
Oh.
So.
That's what she said.
Yeah, so I appreciate her activities on the forums. I know that she's super busy with her podcast, Hodgepodge Point.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's no catch up to do. And I do have a tech tip for this week.
You do?
I do.
All right, lay it on me.
So those of you that use iTunes, and especially, in my opinion, if you have an iPod and your listening is a little bit mobile, there is a hidden piece of information. It's not really hidden. It's available, but they don't really advertise it. It's called skipped count. So it's how many times you've skipped a song, like hit the fast forward and skipped past a song.
Right.
So what I've done on my iPod is I've set up, I think it's 3 smart playlists.
Yes.
One smart playlist is music that I have not listened to, and of which there's a lot. I've got a 30 gig iPod. I listen to a lot of music at work, but it's mostly in iTunes and not the stuff on my iPod.
Right.
So I have stuff that I haven't listened to. I also have another one that I have listened to the music at least 3 times and have skipped it less than 3 times.
Right.
So, in other words, that's music that I've heard several times and rarely do I skip it.
Right.
It just seems like a good way to sort of honed, and I also made a list for anything I've skipped over five times. Because then I can kind of go in and say, you know what?
I keep skipping these songs.
Do they really need to be on my iPod? So there's my tech tip for the day, the smart playlist. And you have to toy with those a little bit. Like, I had to make sure that none of it was podcasts.
Yes, because it counts everything in there.
Yep, no to podcasts. I had to eliminate there's a data point called kind, and where not equal, where equals or contains audio.
Right.
Because I started getting videos in there as well. So you have to play with it a little bit. But yeah, the skipped count, I think, is a really cool way. I had a system before where I'd give stuff that I really didn't like 1 star.
Oh, and then you'd filter out the ones.
Then I'd filter out the one-star ones. But it's kind of a pain in the ass in that if you're driving or if you're doing something, you have to hit the center button. You have to do the circle thing to 1 star.
I never use the ratings.
No, neither do I.
Never use them.
No. I figure if it's on my iPod, it's at least a 3.
I just put everything on there. I have a very limited selection of music. All my music can fit on my iPod, and I'm listening to music,
I put whole albums on there. You're right. So, like, if I have a whole album that I've bought, I put the whole thing on there, but there's only like 2 songs that I like from it.
Right.
So yeah, the skipped count seems to be a better way to do that. The only annoying thing about the skip count thing is that let's say you've got 10 songs in your smart playlist of songs that you've skipped at least 5 times. Well, you can't delete them from the playlist.
Right.
You have to actually go in, but you can still do that. If you right-click along the top, you can add skipped count as a field in your list.
Ah, there you go.
And then you can just sort by skipped count, group those together, and delete those.
And trash them. Yeah. So. It's funny, I love my iPod to death, and the main thing I do with it is listen to podcasts.
And that's, well,
rarely do I listen to music on my iPod.
Me too. And that's actually one of the reasons that I looked into doing this, is because it's so rare that I listen to music on my iPod. I really want the stuff that I really enjoy.
Right.
And of course, that this doesn't take care of, you can get really complicated and make up, genre listings and, I've never skipped any of these techno songs more than twice. So I must really like all these techno songs. And you can get deeper in there, but I don't know. For me, I have a tendency to be very eclectic, in that I can listen to a techno song, and then if it goes right into, an Isaac Hayes song, it's just kind of fun. I'm like, oh, I haven't listened to this in a long time.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter to me.
I'm the same way. It drives my wife nuts. She's like, how can you do that?
How can you switch modes? And I think the only exception to that is when I'm performing a specific task. Like, if I'm working out, I don't really want Motown.
No. I love it when I'm programming and I'm really deep into it. Techno is I program the techno, and I freaking love it.
Yeah. And I would strongly recommend, here's a martial arts tip, actually, for anyone that works out at home or works out on their own or even has a school, experiment with having music included in your workout. Because in San Yendo, we always have music with our workouts.
Right.
Of which I've got to update our playlist. It's getting repetitious. But we always have music with our workouts. And it there's an energy level difference, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I can understand why some schools wouldn't want to do it all the time, or maybe not at all, but it's one of those things where it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, and I think it happens on a subconscious level, too.
It really does.
I mean, you catch yourself in the middle of it going, hey, I'm kind of hanging out, doing this thing to the beat a little bit. I think it adds a lot.
I was working out in my Wing Chun class today, and it was just all of a sudden you could hear the crickets.
Right.
Fuck, it's really fucking quiet in here. But, so music for your workouts is always a good thing. I'm going to close this door.
Oh, all right. We're getting some outdoor sounds. I think this is going to be our outdoorsy episode. I can hear the fountain in the background, some wind chimes, a little breeze.
Yes.
It's making me kind of tired.
Okay. It's making me want to thatch my lawn. Let's see. Another good... okay, so let's move on to tech and science, shall we?
Yes, let's do that.
Now, I'm going to have to look up some stuff as we're doing this, because I actually do have some tech and science stuff. Tech and science stuff. Let's see. Oh, I know what I can do.
What were the links that I threw in there? I swear I threw a science one in there.
You threw in Cliffy B's blog and streaming audio.
What?
Oh, wait a minute. I'm on the wrong person.
You freak.
No wonder. Oh, man. Okay, hang on. No wonder I fucked this all up.
Yeah.
The one that I was looking for, actually, was that they have found an extrasolar planet in the habitable zone.
Yes.
Around another star.
They said it was between 40 degrees and 120 degrees, the temperature.
That is a really, really, really good range. I mean, to me, when... I've been watching the Planet Earth series, and it is remarkable to me the cracks and crevices and holes and dark places on the planet that they find life.
Yes.
And it's not just a little bit of life. It is everywhere.
Yep.
It is absolutely everywhere. The deepest part of the ocean to the tallest mountain to the deepest cave that they can find. It is just everywhere. And so, in my opinion, And I don't know. I mean, I know that there's a lot of factors that go into it. Like, you gotta make sure you have water, but...
And the right mix of stuff in the air.
The right mix
and...
of stuff in the air, and the lightning's gotta hit the right place at the right time, and all that jazz. But it just seems to me that, well, as Carl Sagan always says, you know, if there weren't life on other planets, it would be a terrible waste of space. but it just seems to me that, you know, water is one of the most abundant elements, not an element, but, you know, things
compounds.
In the universe, compounds in the universe, as well as nitrogen and oxygen. These are not rare things. It's not like life needs, you know, plutonium to exist.
Right.
They're fairly common. So that we've found one extrasolar planet on one star, and it's all a matter of numbers. Because if you survey a billion stars and you find one planet that's habitable, and you say, okay, one out of every million of those types of planets are actually going to have life, that means life is littered throughout the universe.
Yeah.
Because there are, I think there's 200 billion stars in our galaxy alone.
Right, so that's not counting the other 200 billion in each other
right.
galaxy, and how many galaxies are there.
So even if you use those extremely high, safe numbers, there's still, like, you know, 200 civilizations in our galaxy alone.
Yeah.
And I've always thought that.
But of course,
was really interesting.
We'll never really... be able to do anything, even if we figure out there are somebody out there, because it's too damn far away.
It's too damn far away. We've got to figure out warp drive.
Didn't we have a discussion about, we had a big discussion the other day about transporters.
Transporters, yes.
Star Trek transporters, and the
yes.
fact that what happens when you, did we do this in the podcast?
I don't know.
What happens when you beam somebody down to, you know, or you teleport somebody
yes.
somewhere?
Yes.
Does their conscience come with them? I mean, is everything contained in
yeah.
their atoms? Is everything contained?
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to take all of our molecules, disassemble them, put them together over here.
Yes.
Would we be the same person?
Well, this is my thing, is I wouldn't want to be the first to do it.
Oh, me either.
Because...
You'd turn into the fly.
Think about it like this, right? Let's say you have a transporter system that's able to essentially turn your body, your physical form, into just like energy.
Yep.
And then reconstitute it somewhere else.
Right.
What if that process didn't destroy the original you?
Right. It just, what, copied it?
So now you have a perfect duplicate of yourself somewhere.
But
and in fact, there was a great short story about this where they had this transporter system. And it was very eerie, though, because what had to happen was, is you were transported somewhere else, and then they had to kill the original you.
Well, that's the... They just did a movie on that. The Prestige. The Prestige is the magician who does
that. Sorry for anyone who hasn't seen that. That's that's a pretty major spoiler.
If you haven't seen it by now, you're screwed anyway. And regardless of that, it's still fantastic. But...
Yeah.
Well, my thing is, though, if it's going to take that energy, and there's the thing, is how are you going to... Are you going to send... That energy is only going to ever travel the speed of light, right?
Right.
So you'd have to actually... Figure out how and turn you into energy and reproduce that energy over here. So in my mind, at this point, technically you can't send you over there. You have to deconstruct you here and rebuild you.
Why using, would you have to deconstruct you?
Well, figure out what you are. Well, you deconstruct you so that way you're not there's not two of you in one place or two of you in separate places.
Right.
And what if there is?
The real question is,
do you have consciousness in both places? Do you remember everything? Do you have the same experiences?
Well, what would happen is you just make a doppelganger of yourself.
Well, right, but
and both of you be like, I'm Sterling. No, I'm Sterling.
But what
no,
about Sterling. Things like your spirit? Do we have spirits? Do we have a consciousness? Is that stuff all contained solely in physical attributes?
That's why Scotty never wanted to use the teleporter.
Exactly.
No, it wasn't Scotty. It was McCoy.
McCoy? Oh.
That's why McCoy never wanted to use the teleporter.
But he did all the time. They always beamed him down.
No, he didn't. He never liked it. He always complained about it.
Oh, well, but he did it.
Yeah, yeah. But he never liked it.
Right. So, it's like my wife complaining about sex. She never liked it, but she did it.
Well, you know... Got to throw a dog a bone every once in a while. so, yeah, I mean, you know, that's where science needs philosophy, in my
right.
opinion. And that's really, you know, who was it? The Richard Hatch interview.
Yes.
Actually, one of the things...
For those of you who don't know, go listen to the Geeks On episode where they interview Richard Hatch. He's from... He played Apollo in the original Battlestar Galactica.
And he plays the vice president...
No, he plays a radical.
Yes, fundamental.
Fundamentalist.
No, he's not
dude.
A fundamentalist. He's a power to the people radical guy in the new one.
Yeah, what do they call it? He's a revolutionary.
Revolutionary. There you go.
And the new Battlestar Galactica, but fan freaking tastic interview. I mean, did you? Sorry, I'm gonna let you finish your story first.
One of the things that he was talking about is that, you know, people don't really understand there's a difference between like popcorn science fiction and truly like insightful science fiction.
Exactly.
And I think there's a lot of people, especially people who aren't science fiction fans, that get those mixed up.
Yep.
When I think of Star Wars, to me, Star Wars is a little bit borderline popcorn science fiction.
It is popcorn science fiction.
But there are science fiction artists like Niven and Asimov, people like that, that really, they make you think about those questions about, you know, boy, a teleporter is sort of a silly Star Trek type thing, but it begs the question, what happens to your soul when you go through that teleporter?
Yeah.
So anyway, I think that I think science fiction can sort of put these important questions into people's minds and make them think about it.
Well, and I think that's one of the things. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people know this or not, but many of the crazy things we now have, the crazy technologies we now have, were inspired by people who thought about things like that and wrote fictional stories about those things. I mean, we have robots today.
Yes.
We have them.
We have space stations and space shuttles.
Yeah.
That's what blows my mind.
Right, like, and people used to write about those in a fictional sense, like way, way in the future we would have spaceships.
Star Trek, when they were like, go jump on the shuttle and go down to the planet. We fucking have shuttles.
Right.
I mean, not like that, but I mean, they're communicators. Our cell phones. They're the same fucking thing.
Exactly.
Except they just don't call up to orbit. Although some do.
Some do.
I mean, if you look at satellite phones.
Yep. So it's crazy. So, I mean, people who discount science fiction are discounting the fact that some of the cool shit you're using, like a computer.
Right.
Was that somebody made that up years and years and years ago and never thought. And and now it's here.
Yeah. What was your point? You were talking about something about the thing and the stuff.
I can't freaking remember.
Okay, well, let's move on, shall we? OpenID. Did we talk about this already?
Oh, no. Yeah. This is brilliant. I love this.
I checked into this, and it was very confusing.
Was it?
I didn't really understand how to, like, there was no sign up here, or...
No.
I didn't understand exactly what I had to do to get an OpenID.
Well, here's the deal. There's a My OpenID page where you go and sign up and get an OpenID. Okay. It's like signing up for another website.
Let's back up. Let's talk
about OpenID. First of all, I heard about this a while ago on Twitter. Right,
yes.
And Leo Laporte talked briefly about a JavaScript application he used to keep track of all of his usernames and all of his passwords.
Right.
So what he had was this application on his computer where he would put in all of his usernames and passwords, and it would keep track of them, and he had like a master password.
Yeah.
And so he could use that to interact with all of his stuff.
A lot of security programs will do that, actually.
Right.
They give you one man, and then you just list out all your passwords and usernames.
Because what happens is, and I'm sure anybody who's listening to this realizes that, you sign up for a million different blogs, websites, all these kinds of things, and what do you end up doing? You use the same username, and you have 3 to 4 passwords that you constantly use.
You just cycle through them.
And how safe is that?
It's not at all.
I've
often thought I have different levels to my passwords.
Me too.
I have a sign up for the form at Karate Cafe.
You have a shit password.
It's a password
that you don't care if anybody finds it. You don't even know, because who cares?
And then I have one for like banking and credit cards and PayPal accounts and things like that.
And that's your Uber password.
That's
the one you don't
Uber
want
password.
Anyone to know, and will be very, very difficult to guess.
That's the one where I use upper and lowercase. I use a number and
all the special characters. Yes.
Yep.
And I have an in-between one.
I have an in-between one as well.
Right. And because I don't like using my super secure password often.
Because it's a pain in the ass to type out.
Right. Well, not only that, I don't want anybody to get it.
Right.
And this is where OpenID comes in.
Okay.
The more you have to type your username and password, the bigger chance you have of somebody, you know, keylogging you or finding your password.
Yes.
Or being fished off to some other site, and all of a sudden you're doing this, right?
Yeah.
So along comes OpenID. OpenID is basically something someone would have to support, so it's not built in. There's limited support for it.
Who would have to support?
Here's an idea of
An individual site.
An application would have to support OpenID.
Okay.
For example, Google basically has a Google-wide OpenID. You have one username and one password.
For documents.
Can open all their applications.
Everything.
Right. So what this thing says, what OpenID is a similar thing. You would sign up for a username and a password. A site that supports OpenID... You would not have to log in to the site.
But it would know who you are.
You would say, I'm logging in. You'd log in one time and say, I'm going to use my Sterling Hayback OpenID.
Okay.
That way you don't have to retype your password.
Okay.
So you can use that to any site that supports OpenID. You log into your OpenID account one time. And any other site that supports OpenID, it keeps track of that. You just press the button. There's no typing.
Use my OpenID.
Right. Because you're already signed in. So you're not constantly retyping your username and password.
Now, when you say use my OpenID, you still have to give it a username and password the first time, though.
No.
Oh, you don't?
It redirects you to the OpenID site and says, this site wants to use your OpenID. Should I allow it? Yes. And you can set up preferences for all the different sites that support OpenID. You can say, I want to use this site. I want to allow it once. I want it from now on. Whenever I log into this site, go ahead and authenticate me.
Really?
Yes.
So then the OpenID site becomes the master password list.
Yes, that's your master password list, and all the sites that I say yes, go ahead and authenticate me.
So the big deal then is there has to... That's weird. So you don't have a list of passwords, though, anywhere?
No.
So how do they authenticate that you're you?
Because it's linked, it uses your OpenID.
And what is my OpenID?
Your OpenID, like my OpenID is, well, maybe I shouldn't say, let's say it doesn't really matter.
For example,
it would be joe.myopenid.com.
Okay.
That's my ID.
So smokey.mcpot.com.
Right.
For example.
But for when we use OpenID, since we're talking OpenID right now, is a particular piece of software that uses this technology, this whole master password list thing. So when you have an OpenID, it would be dan.myopenid.com.
Okay.
you know, mine's sterling.openid, myopenid.com.
Okay.
So that's your identification. It's like having a
unique
identity. Right. It's like having a social security number.
Okay.
Right. So that's authentic. So that's your special ID.
Okay.
And whenever you log into somebody's site who says we support OpenID, you put in your OpenID name, and it will automatically redirect that site to your OpenID point.
What prevents me from typing in your OpenID?
You would have to be able to get into my OpenID site to do that.
To say
if you said use Sterling's OpenID site. When it tried to go back to the my OpenID page, you would have to know my OpenID password to do that.
Okay, so OpenID takes one password. I get it.
Right.
Right.
OpenID takes one password.
It's just like the Google analogy.
Yes.
Where you authenticate at one location.
Exactly.
And once you authenticate at that location, you're covered anywhere until you have to renew your authentication.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Now, the people who are against this say, well, this makes it easier for fishers. Because what if some guy fishes your OpenID and says, go log into your OpenID, and you fish to their site and type in your OpenID, and now your whole master password that controls all your sites
is there. And that's very true. I mean, that is, to me, anyway, it's to some degree the same risk that you run when you use 1Password.
Right.
So I think that possibly how I would be comfortable using this is my low and medium level passwords, if I could have those all covered by OpenID.
Right.
And then my bank accounts, my credit cards and things like that still use my, you know, 10 character alphanumeric password.
Yep.
Then it seems like it would alleviate a lot of hassle of having to, because sometimes I have more than one username as well, because I try a particular username that's already taken, or some sites like Netflix require you to type out your entire email address, so you sign up under an email address.
Yes.
And oftentimes I get to a site that I haven't been to in a long time. I've got to try 3 or 4 different usernames
and
3 or 4 different passwords in combination with those 3 or 4 different usernames.
Right.
And it's a real pain in the
ass. That's where the frustration is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm like, oh, this is a sweet idea.
So how do you sign up for it?
Well, you have to go to the OpenID site, and there's a myopenid.com site.
Oh, there is.
So you go to myopenid.com, and then it lets you sign up for an OpenID. Now, it's not very well supported right now. There's not a lot of people supporting it yet. The initiative, in my mind, is pushing towards these kinds of things. Because eventually, I mean, like we just talked about it, you got to try 3 or 4 different usernames, 3 or 4 different password combinations.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Well, right? This is the thing for me is that you said WordPress supports it, right?
Yes, you have to configure a plugin. In fact, I configured our Oxer Media site. Our Oxer Media site right now, our forum or our blog, when you sign into the blog to do comments and that kind of stuff.
www.podzor.com.
Yep. So when you log into there to do comments or anything, it now supports OpenID.
And I wish it would be really nice if the forum supported it.
And I've been looking around to see what applications are now supporting it.
And see, to me, like, for example, PHPBB, which is the forums that we use.
And they might.
Prolific. It's used everywhere.
Yes.
Everybody uses PHPBB. And if they started supporting it, and if not only did they support it, but if it was a part of the standard install, then when people go up to upgrade their PHPBB, boom, it would already be in there.
Well, now get this. The OpenID guys are offering like a $10,000 incentive to include support for OpenID in the core of your application.
Really?
Anybody who includes OpenID in the core application gets a $10,000.
Now, my understanding as well is because it's OpenID, this is not technology that is regulated by a single group.
This is all open source.
So, for example, I go out to my OpenID. This is what confused me. The link that we have goes to openid.net.
Right.
Which explains the technology.
Yes.
My OpenID is a place where you can sign up to get an OpenID.
Correct.
I'm guessing there could be multiple websites that offer OpenID services.
Right.
So that's the idea behind it. And that's what I like about it, is that if I have a My OpenID account and all of a sudden they want to charge me $5 a month for it,
I can go to somebody else.
I can go to somebody else that can use essentially the same technology doing the same thing.
Yep.
So.
And just to go back to the whole deal with the whole phishing deal, when you use the internet in any capacity whatsoever, there's a lot – there's some user training that goes along with that. And my biggest – I'll say this as a tech tip. You should never click on a link to go to a site where you have important information you do not want people to get.
Well,
you should always type the URL in the address bar.
And in fact, I always suggest, you know, if you get an email from anywhere that you have to sign in an account, if you get an email and it's eBay or Yahoo or your bank or any of those things, if you have to type in a username and password, close the window and type out ebay.com and go into your messages.
Yes.
Don't rely on clicking that link.
Right. And I've been like getting stuff that cracks me up. I get messages every day in my email that say, your payment has been successfully sent. And I open it up, and that's all it is, and it looks like it's from Macatawa Bank. But if you look at the actual address, it's like macatawabnk.com. You know what I mean?
Right.
And right. So you just be very attentive to the URLs. You know, if you go to a site and they're asking you to sign up, make sure the little secure icon is there. Look at the URL and see if the URL has changed from the name that you went into. Like if you go to log into Citibank and you click on a link and you look at the URL and it says, you know, Citibank instead of Citibank, pay attention to that stuff.
Yeah, and my ProfessorDan.net got hacked.
Did it?
Yeah, and somebody had a phishing scam on my site. They were able to upload a file. I had a file uploader on the site for students to upload their homework to. This guy uploaded his HTML. And sure enough, it was a page on my site that was a phishing scam.
What a bastard.
Yeah, that was a little embarrassing.
Yep. Well, I'm getting sick of that. It's like PHPBB, our bulletin board that we use for our forums, constantly gets struck by people adding usernames and trying. So I don't know if anybody's noticed, but you now have to – I have to approve your comment at least once before you're allowed to comment freely. And that's because people keep signing up and pushing comments about, you know, cock enlargers. And putting it on our comments, and it's driving me bonkers.
Not that we mind those ads, but...
Right.
And some of them are quite... Funny.
Now, I did turn on some stuff that's supposed to catch that in WordPress.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There was an add-on that I turned on to help catch some of that stuff and get rid of it, and it's done a really good job so far.
Oh, my God. I'm so sick of... There's one particular post that we have. It's the Winter Storm post on our WordPress blog.
I know.
That constantly gets hit.
Yep.
With spam comments. I even turned the spam. I turned the comments off for that post, and I'm still getting them.
I still did. I did the same thing. I've gotten certain posts that get hit constantly, and I turned off comments completely, and they still keep doing it.
There's some kind of weirdness.
And I can't. Yeah. So while somebody hacked it.
WordPress.
Right.
Yeah.
And like I'm like I turned off. I mean, authentication. It should by default. When somebody makes a username, it should delete those. I mean. I've almost got to the point where I've almost turned off user sign up just to see if people could still sign up.
Yeah.
Because somebody, I get 2 to 3 emails a day with a new user ID has been created, and it's always cocksmoker blah blah at cocksmoking.com, and we'd like you to buy our cocksmoking sauce.
They make sauce for that?
I think so.
Oh, cool. So let's move on, shall we? Windows, oh, this is a big debate between you and I.
Oh, I know.
Windows XP to be phased out by year's end despite customer demand.
Oh, I'm going to take some time out here to say who was right. Sterling was right.
I was right because I believe that you forgot the details of our conversation.
What? You said they weren't going to do it.
I said, well, first of all, they haven't done it yet, right? So they can say they're going to do it all they want.
They did do it.
They did what?
Dell was no longer able to ship. You could not buy a PC from Dell that had anything but Vista on it.
Right. My argument was that they won't drop support for it.
Well, they didn't say that yet.
Right.
But they're making the push.
Right.
Mark my words.
And I would say, in my honest opinion, that if you buy a new machine from Dell or Gateway or Compaq or whatever it is, having Vista on it is not the worst thing in the world.
Have you used Vista?
No.
It is extremely unstable.
Really?
Explorer crashes constantly.
Well, that's why you use Firefox.
I'm having... No. Explorer.
Oh, geez, really?
Yes. What's the other thing?
No, wait.
i7 kind of sucks.
Did you get a new machine with Vista pre-installed?
Brand new machine with Vista pre-installed.
Coxmovers.
Yes. And not only that, it's a little bulky. It's a little slow. I got application support for that right now. It's crap. Freaking even Visio. I've got Visio, right, which is a Microsoft Office product. It crashes. Whenever I close Visio, Visio's got it. Whenever I log in, I get this error that says, oh, we cannot find some driver for this. Would you like to correct this? But you can't correct it. It's ridiculous. They moved everything all over the place. It looks nice. Don't get me wrong. It looks nice.
Yes.
I like the dual monitor. There's a couple of really interesting things. When you open up the start menu, the little Windows button, you can type anything in there, and as you type, it filters out the window list, the start menu, as you type.
Oh, really?
That's awesome.
That's very awesome.
And here's the other thing they did, right? They sort of Linux-sized it. You can run certain things as administrator. You can no longer modify your host file unless you right click and say open as administrator.
See, and that's really nice. There was a old
school, but it's a pain in the ass because the way they implement it, you can't. I mean, those are common tasks you have to do.
This is my thing
for Windows. That,
for example, if you have Ubuntu installed,
yes,
you have to go in and explicitly say, allow admin to log in. And you can do that.
Yes.
You can log in as root on an Ubuntu system, but you have to go in and explicitly allow it.
No, you don't. No.
You can't just type in root unless you say...
No, but you're not supposed to. What you do is you go in and you run any command you need to run as the super user.
But isn't that exactly what you're saying that this is doing?
Yeah, but the problem with that is... things like the host file, especially in an environment where we're at, have to make modifications because of the Windows operating system and how it works on the back end.
This is my
It's just not conducive to
is
that.
Is that no operating system should completely lock you out of any of that stuff. If I want to set myself up as administrator, as a system admin, and be able to gorf anything I want...
Right.
I should be able to do that. I don't want Microsoft saying, nope, sorry, this is the way you have to modify the host file, or any file for that matter.
Right.
I should be able to open up, you know, a system-level DLL, fuck that thing up, and crash my entire system if I want to.
Yep.
and I think that where it's a real problem is for developers.
Yes.
Because if you're developing things for Vista, or you're trying to write a plugin for IE, or whatever the case might be, the deeper that you get into, you know, I have to modify the fucking host file.
Right.
And, I'll give you a good example. We had to install something at work on every system in the company. And we don't want to visit every station.
No.
But due to our permissions, we don't allow our general users write permission to the program files directory.
Exactly.
So we had to come up with, it was a really wild, it was kind of a clever solution, but it was wild. We do a run as command from a bash file.
Yep.
Have a 2-second timeout, and then we do a send keys command to the password. Because run as doesn't allow you to have the password as a parameter for it.
Okay.
So we pull a command window up as the administrator, and then we run the MSI file.
Right.
And as long as the MSI is run within the security context of the administrator,
you're
good to go. Yep. So there's a lot of fucking headache that stuff like that creates. And if you're working with your own damn machine, you know, our policy at work is that everybody in the IT department has full rights to their own machine. If you fuck your machine up, you're the one rebuilding it.
Right.
You can't go to the techs and say, rebuild my machine.
I know.
Because they'll be like, here's the fucking disk, dude.
Well, and my problem with the whole Vista thing is, I'm an administrator on my own machine. My account is administrator. So when I want to modify my host file, I shouldn't have to run as administrator. No. I should just be able to open it and modify it. Nope, can't do it. And the thing is it's like they, I swear, it,
you should be able to run a super user.
To me, it looks like they put it in as an afterthought. Oh, well, let's all of a sudden put this in there. Linux does it. It works for them. And they didn't think about the fact that, well, first of all, their operating system's not Linux, right? And they're trying to do all these little things and tricks, and it's just like, look, you didn't even put any thought into that.
The key, in my opinion, is Linux lets you not do it.
Right.
That's the difference, is it gives you the option to not do it if you don't want to.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I know that they've had a lot of problems with people blaming them for a lot of security issues, which sometimes are, sometimes aren't their fault.
Well, look, Windows is not inherently the most secure operating system. It's got, I mean...
Well, and the problem is it goes back to the more freedom and options you give somebody, the more security problems you're going to have.
Well, I don't know.
I'll give you
look at a Mac. Look at a Mac.
It's just because they're not attacked as much.
That is so not true. In fact, they have a whole article on it. They have a whole article. They talk about that specifically. We talked about this months ago.
Well, let me.
There was an article that specifically said that.
Let's talk about phishing.
Yes.
So, if Microsoft decided with Outlook, they weren't going to allow you to click on a link in an email to open up a browser.
Right.
They were going to make the business decision on their end to not have that functionality in Outlook. Would that be a good or a bad thing?
Nah, probably a bad thing.
But is it their fault that people fall prey to phishing scams then?
No, but phishing's outside the context of the operating system. The things that we're worried about is the fact that you download a Word file and open it and it runs a macro on your computer. I can't open my host file without right-clicking and saying run as administrator, but you can let it run a macro that fucks my whole operating system up?
Right, but
that is a fundamental flaw.
But what's going to happen is somebody's going to download something that modifies their host file so that when you go out to yahoo.com, it's going to go out, it's actually going to send you to yoho.com.
Right.
And then you're going to type in your username and password and you're going to be fucked.
Right.
And people are going to blame Microsoft because they allowed the user to modify the host file.
Right. Well, my whole point is this. They just got done having the hack fest for the Mac. Find a way to hack into a Mac, win $10,000 or win $50,000 or blah, 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 blah. They basically had to loosen up the rules of what constituted a hack and allow somebody to hack in through a phishing scam to be considered elite, to consider it an actual hack on the Mac, because nobody could actually hack into the system. Because they changed over to BSD?
BSD.
Yeah. So all I'm saying is, you know, if you're going to look for true security, Windows, I mean, the problem is Windows didn't start from the ground up that way. That wasn't one of their goals. It became a goal as the world became more
webilized.
So the problem is they're trying to backtrack, and I know how that works. I mean, it's like taking a system that's already there. They can't scrap everything because they've already got too much invested. So they're trying to go back through and fix these things as they go along.
Well,
and I don't think they're ever going to catch up.
I guess one of the things that is a true consideration where, for example, I know several people that have web pages being served out from their house.
Yes.
And so what they do is they forward a port in their router to some machine.
Yep.
And that machine serves web pages. The problem becomes is that if there is a problem with the software that serves the web pages, hackers have a way into that computer.
Absolutely.
If that computer is on the network with the rest of the computers in your house, that is a vulnerability.
Yes.
And I guess my feeling is that, you know, I look at some of these guys that are hacking wireless networks.
Yeah.
And what they used to do was they would listen to the network traffic until they got enough keys that they could actually backtrack and find out what the encryption key for that wireless network was.
Right.
Now what they do, and it took them like 2 or 3 weeks. Now what they do is they hammer the network with traffic, generating a bunch of traffic, and it takes them like 5 minutes now.
How?
So 64-bit web encryption is now almost useless.
I don't get how they can do that. So they hammer you with traffic. All it's going to do is say deny, 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 deny.
But it says the first thing it does is it says deny, but it's an encrypted deny. Because the router is using the encryption when it sends you the deny back.
But you still have to, how do you find out the encryption? Just by having an encrypted file. How are they getting the key from that?
What they do is they have millions and millions of files. And every time it's encoded, every time it's encoded, and they just reverse engineer the fucking thing. I've seen it. I saw a YouTube video of this guy going, okay, I'm running it. Here it is. Here's the, and believe me, these guys are all fucking, I mean, this is not something you do casually.
Right.
Right?
So, it's a full-time job.
Oh, and it's all Linux stuff, and it's all command line.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you're not going to be hacking other people's machines without running Linux. No,
but he was running like Etherreel.
Or
connected, collected probably like a couple hundred thousand packets off of Etherreel, sniffing just the network. And
that's crazy. There's so many smart people out there.
That's why I leave my router open. And one of the reasons I do is because I can do silly shit like, you know, it's a fucking hassle to have encryption on there, first of all. My PSP doesn't work as well. My DS doesn't work as well. I'd have to configure my Wii and my Xbox 360, and it's just a fucking headache.
I didn't have any problems. My router comes with WEP already turned on because it's a router or DSL line. The WEP's automatically turned on.
Okay. Mine is
I didn't mind it. It's, eh. I didn't mind it. You got to type in the code, but once it's set up, it's set up.
So, yeah, I just ignored it because I figured, you know what? If somebody really, really wants to get into my network, they're going to fucking get in anyway.
Right.
If somebody's looking to do damage to my computers at home.
Most of those people aren't, though. Most of the people who do that are doing that so they can do stuff to other people's computers through your connection. So they're not doing it to damage personal. Most people do that because they want to piggyback on you to install some bots or do nefarious things somewhere else. Yes. And then when the police come looking, they go, oh, your IP was used.
That's my fear, is that if somebody, you know, is sitting in my driveway surfing for kiddie porn and I get busted for it, that's kind of a problem.
Right. So. But the thing is, honestly, with a lot of these routers nowadays, I don't know, some of them are really strong. Like my dad bought one for his church that goes all the way across the church parking lot, all the way to the pastor's house. And he didn't have to do anything to it. And they were picking it up in his garage. And I'm thinking, I can't pick my wireless router up outside on my front porch.
Can we pause this for a second? We've got groceries.
Groceries!
Okay.
And we're back. All right. So we now have beer
and Twizzlers.
Twizzlers. And
you
Dan's
guys
wife.
Want some?
Dan's wife. Yeah, here
no,
we go. Have
you
some.
Sure? No? Okay.
All right.
Sterling?
Yep.
No, I'm good.
All right. So my mouth is going to be full of Twizzlers.
Mm-hmm. That'll be good. That way we won't be able to hear you.
Yeah.
All right. Where were we?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Okay.
Security, internet stuff. All right. So what other tech and science stuff we got here?
Let's see. Gapminder.
Gapminder? Ooh, did I send that one?
I must have sent this. What the hell is Gapminder?
You guys can hear our lunch being cooked in the background.
Yes.
We're anxiously awaiting. It smells really good.
Gapminder nominated for Webby.
What?
Oh, boy. I have no idea what this is.
All right, next one then. Forget it.
Next! Oh, this is probably a good one, too, because it was one of mine. plus, I just think the name is funny. Wait. We've got dead air.
Come on, dude. You're manning the keyboard here. You're slacking.
Oh, dead air. Let's see. Nintendo8.com.
What?
Tooltip.
You people don't know this, but now Dan also has
a Wii as well. That's right. We haven't done one since
I got it. Right. So we're now an official Wii organization.
We should post our Wii numbers.
That's a good idea. We'll post our Wii codes up there. So anybody else who has a Wii, number 3 has a Wii now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know who else does, but damn, is it fun.
Oh, God. Too much fun.
Yeah, we're going to play some Wario Smooth Moves a little bit later. Mm-hmm. So, Wii8.com?
Nintendo8.com there's a shitload of 8-bit Nintendo games that you can play. Stuff like Excitebike, Kid Icarus, things like that. It all runs on Java. So make sure you download the latest install of Java. It is a blast. It is an absolute blast. I tried it on the Wii browser. It doesn't work so good.
No.
But
interestingly enough, there is a Wii Flash site. I think it's called WiiFlash.com. And all it is are Flash games that are meant to be used with your Wii controller.
No way.
So you go to your Wii, go to the Wii browser, go to WiiFlash.com, and then you can play all those Flash games using your Wii.
I was just actually... I was browsing around the internet on my Wii the other day, and YouTube is awesome.
Yes.
That's a lot of fun. YouTube works really well.
I'm absolutely amazed at how smooth and clear the zooming is. You have to zoom in a lot, and it's like wherever you're pointing... with your Wiimote, and you press the zoom button, it zooms right into what you're looking at. It's just a brilliant implementation.
Crystal clear. So, let's see. The other one we have, which is more of a... Well, it's still tech and science, I think. It's tech. 35 designers were asked 5 questions.
Oh, this was great.
And I don't know if you got to see this.
I did. I read that. I sent that to my boss, actually.
Yeah. If you're doing any kind of web development or anything on the internet at all... Even blogging, I think this applies to. Or if, for God's sakes, if you're designing a MySpace site.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so, you already got 2 strikes against you if you're using MySpace to begin with. But
one is one aspect of design you give the highest priority to. Almost every one of them is communication.
Yes. Well, that's what the internet is about.
Right. And a lot of people forget that. But especially if you're doing something for a business... Consider the message that you want people to get when they go to the site. That's the most important thing.
Yeah. Everything else...
What's the message that you want to send? Usability was one. Navigation. Things like that. I think usability and navigation often go hand in hand.
Right.
So, yeah, just... These are up on the links if anybody really wants to check them out, but... They're very good tips.
For anybody out there who does any kind of development on the web, you should definitely go look at the Yahoo User Interface Library. It's called UI, Y-U-I, and it's Yahoo's Ajax toolkit. And it is fan-freaking-tastic. At BizStream, where I work now, that's our official platform. We're converting everything over to Ajax and doing some really killer stuff. And it's amazing how easy it is to use.
Have you used the Ajax API for .NET?
No.
Holy shit.
No.
It's so easy.
I went through and looked at it. This
so easy.
The Yahoo stuff puts that to shame. I kid you not.
I kid you not. This is the thing, is that if you're used to using .NET, all you have to do is you have to wrap your controls in a panel, and then everything works exactly the same.
Oh, really?
It just doesn't do... It doesn't post back the full page. It only posts back what's in the panel. And it is sweet.
Dude. When you get a chance, go check out the Yahoo one.
All right.
It's unbelievable. It's difficult for me to explain. There's just so much stuff that it does.
Okay. I'm looking for Dig right now. All right,
screw it. Let's move on to...
I don't really remember any good, big news stories that happened.
Well, nothing big's been going on, really.
Yep. Google bought DoubleClick.
Right, DoubleClick.
That's kind of a big one, but... I have both DoubleClick and Google Ads pointing to my local host in my host file.
Do you?
So those all get blocked for me. I never see any of those ads. And in fact, I thought there was a problem with our site because we had the Google ads on our site and they would never come up for me. I'm like, where are they? And then I realized I have a host file posting for us.
That's cool.
So anyway, let's move on, shall we?
All right, let's move on to Movie Making.
We'll be right back. in the making. We do have a plan for the next two guys.
We do.
There is a plan. There's not a script, but there's a plan. So that should be coming at some point. Because it's a really quick and easy one.
So. Is it?
I told you about it at the party, although you were hammered.
You didn't tell me. You said, I have an idea for the two guys.
I told you.
Did you?
Yes.
I was hammered.
Yeah. So that's it for movies. Seen anything good lately?
No, although I do hear very good things about Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz?
Hot Fuzz is from the guys who did Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, yeah, the previews look really
right,
fun.
And it's about this guy who's like the top-notch, biggest, baddest cop ever in, I think, in England or whatever, and he basically puts everybody to shame so much that they finally ship him off to some little town where nothing's going on. But of course, he's not satisfied with that. Something must be going on, and sure enough, he uncovers this huge plot, and it's basically from that point, these guys run around just blowing shit up, kicking the crap out of people, and I haven't seen it yet, but it's on my list. I've had two people now that I've talked to that have seen both Shaun of the Dead and seen Hot Fuzz, and they said... absolutely hysterical. So if you like Shaun of the Dead, then you'll like Hot Fuzz.
Okay. I don't think... Have we seen any movies lately, honey?
I don't think so.
I think, well, ever since we got our DVR, we don't really
watch
rent,
TV.
We don't really rent DVDs anymore.
I'm not a big renter. I've got a lot of movies that I want to see, but I'm not a big renter. Spider-Man 3 is coming up. And apparently 28 days later is coming out.
28 more days?
Sure. 28 more days later.
Yes.
The zombie movie, the remake of the zombie movie.
56 days later, right?
Right. So 56 days later is coming out May 5th or something.
Everybody loves a good zombie movie.
And I haven't seen the first one. I heard it was really good. Did you see the first one?
Mm-hmm.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, so I got to see that because Bobby wants me to go see that with him. And of course, my wife won't watch scary movies.
Right.
She doesn't deal well with scary zombies.
That's the point in my white watch.
Yeah, so...
Browsing through the TV last night, we see Carrie. She's like, oh, Carrie's on.
I have a brilliant idea. I have a brilliant idea. This is worth $5.
Oh, wow.
We can start a podcast called Dinner in a Podcast. We podcast while we make dinner and talk about stuff like that, like dinner and a movie. Only podcast, yeah.
That's right.
Dinner and a podcast.
What's this wee shit?
Well, you know, I'm hearing all the cutting noise in the back. I'm like, we could call this episode Lunch in a Podcast. It's brilliant.
We will call it Lunch in a Podcast.
$5 to anybody who starts a podcast called Dinner or Lunch in a Podcast.
Okay.
Or breakfast. Breakfast
they
works.
They have to give us $5.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we're not going to give you $5. What's that?
Then you have to post the recipes.
Right.
I think that is freaking brilliant.
Yes.
All right.
It's called Control-Alt-Chicken.
Control-Alt-Chicken?
Yes.
What?
Control-Alt-Chicken is a cooking podcast.
Well, yeah, but I don't want to talk about cooking while we're cooking.
Oh, I see. Just cooking is happening.
Yeah, like dinner and a movie. You ever watch dinner and a movie?
Yeah.
Love that.
They watch a movie and they comment about the movie and then they show some cookie stuff in between scenes. So we would talk about something, I don't know, who knows.
Brilliant.
Whatever.
Brilliant.
It is brilliant. $5 brilliant. We haven't had a $5 idea in 54 episodes.
Really?
Episode 55, we're five. Isn't that weird? Episode 55, $5 idea.
Maybe it's a $5.50 idea. It's discounted.
$5.50?
Everyone needs to go out and watch The Landlord.
The Landlord?
The Landlord. That's the Will Ferrell short with his daughter.
Oh, yes.
Whatever you do, run out to YouTube, do a Google search, whatever you need to do. Go out and watch The Landlord.
They started the movie site. I think they started it, but it's called Funny or Die.
Yes.
Yeah, Funny or Die. And it was really interesting when I watched that short. I was very much reminded of the stupid shit we do.
Yes.
I mean, it wasn't this high quality, high budget stuff. It was just a really funny idea.
Funny.
And they did it, and it was like, I don't even know, it was less than 5 minutes. It's a little short, and it generated so many hits.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure it helped that Will Ferrell was in it, but.
Yes. Well, and it did, it helped that Will Ferrell was in it, but. It's one of those things where you can make something that people like to watch without tens of thousands of dollars worth of equipment.
Yeah.
They had, it was a guy, his buddy, and his daughter.
Yep.
And an apartment.
Yeah.
Which,
and somebody must have been running the camera.
And somebody must have been running the camera.
That's it. So
it doesn't take a whole lot of rocket science to figure it out.
Right.
But,
and apparently that was his daughter.
Yes.
The Will Ferrell's daughter. Yes. And apparently he caught some flack, of course, because...
Where's my money, bitch?
Where's my money, bitch? And I want my money, motherfucker.
Hey, you know what?
I'm going to get my drink on.
I'm going to get my drink on.
Right. That's right. Well, the best part is when she stumbles off the porch with a beer in her hand.
Are you drunk already?
Because, I mean, who does a better drunk walk than a you know, I don't know, a two-year-old?
Right.
They can barely walk anyway. So, yes, I'm going to highly recommend that one, too. I'm going to give that a 19 on a scale of...
I am too.
Yeah. Mainly just because of the whole process. I mean, it was it was ingenuitive way, and it was a really good idea, and they pulled it off really well.
Yes, they did. And, you know, one of the things that I was listening to Twit, and one of the things that Leah Laporte said was that, actually, if you listen to it without the subtitles, you have no idea what she's saying.
No. No. I had to look at the subtitles to figure out what she was saying.
She could be saying, "Where's my money, itch?"
Right,
and you'd never know it.
No,
but it wouldn't shock me if Will Ferrell taught his kid to say "bitch."
Right, and I think he did an interview and he said, "Look, she doesn't even understand the context in which she's saying it.
No,
she's not. I mean, doing that 5 minutes, you know, of movie and whatever, however long, an hour long it took him to film it, she is so not going to grow up someday and be affected by that somehow negatively.
She's going to grow up and be completely fucked up for totally different reasons.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right. She'll be fucked up because her dad's a famous person and she's going to want attention. She's going to do every guy she sees. She's going to do drugs. She's going to go into rehab.
Wearing underwear.
Exactly.
Shooting beaver all over the place.
And we'll all be right there to make sure the website gets a hit.
That's right.
Video games.
Video games.
Wow.
Well,
what do we say about video games?
What do we say? What do we say?
Let me cover the massive online role-playing market real quick. Lord of the Rings Online came out the 24th.
Oh.
It's getting some good reviews.
MMORPG?
The MMORPG, yep. I didn't like it.
No?
It wasn't so... There was nothing new about
nothing
it.
Nothing new about it, yeah.
I mean, yeah, if you enjoy Lord of the Rings...
You like the world.
...mythology in that world, I recommend it. It's got some good story stuff. Other than that, it's an MMORPG. You know, neither here nor there.
Yep.
The other thing is, Mythic is doing Warhammer Online, and they pushed their release back to first quarter 2008.
Ooh.
Shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. The information coming in on that MMORPG has been so thin. Scant. Very good word.
Scant.
10 points for that.
Thank you.
So scant that I've been waiting around just every day. I go to that site looking for any tidbit about anything that's important, and it's never there.
Wow.
So 2008, which is fine. I'd rather have it be good than not.
Yes.
So.
Other news is, let's see. Zelda is awesome on the Wii. It rocks and rolls.
Yes.
Paper Mario is also awesome as well.
I need to see that.
I gotta show you that today. Replay sucks balls. It's not worth the extra $10. Don't bother. Just get the Wiimote. And...
I don't know. I'd say it is. If you have kids, I think kids would enjoy that. The fishing game's a little bit fun. Being able to turn your remote, find the little memory game you have to play or find the differences.
Maybe.
For young children, it would be fun. Okay. If you don't have kids, I'm gonna have to agree with that.
Yeah. The other news that will be coming up, and I currently have 2 days off planned for this. On the 16th of next month,
yeah,
I start getting to play Halo 3.
Ooh.
Because the Halo 3 beta starts.
Ooh.
And I am in the beta group.
You're just dying,
I'm
huh?
dying, and I'm only going to have a month to play. So I have a month to play Halo. And
I'm taking
2 days off of work. And I'm going to be really fucking tired for the rest of that month. But we will have videos and all kinds of stuff when that comes out.
That's going to be awesome.
Because they've talked explicitly about the fact that they're not.
There's no NDA.
There's no NDA. And the reason is because they said it's going to too many people, and it will be ignored regardless. So we're just going to let everybody do whatever they want.
Right.
We don't really care. But there are some new videos up. One's a quote-unquote leaked video. And I don't think it's all that leaked because nobody had to take it down.
Right.
But Joystick has a really good overview, a step-by-step overview of the leaked video where they talked about, for example, on the main page, before you go into a game, there's a veto button now. So if enough people don't like the game type, you can veto it and it'll switch to a different game type.
That is cool.
Which I know, for example, a lot of people don't like snipers.
Right.
And a lot of people love snipers, but generally you go and play a snipers game if you love snipers that much.
Right.
So now if you get a game type that you don't like, more than half the people say they don't like the game type.
It switches.
Boom, it switches. But that's something that is very, very difficult to notice because it just sort of flashes by. And one of the things they notice as well is... in Zanzibar.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know if you remember the...
The big, the huge... Big world,
the whirlwind. Not the whirlwind. The windmill one.
Yeah, the big windmill.
Well, they noticed there was a super, super fast scan-by of the area where the sword used to be.
Yeah.
And there's this giant blue orb there instead. And they're like, we don't know what that is, but it looks cool.
Yeah.
And it was probably 2 frames long. So they caught stuff like that really you probably don't quite catch just watching the video.
I'm going to have to say I'm a big fan of community policing. Like the whole veto idea is saying we're going to let the whoever, you know, no matter how big or small your community is just the 16 people who are playing, but letting them take control, you know what I mean?
Plus, the Web 2.0 idea is letting people, letting individuals contribute to the, in a community way, in a communal way, to the experience.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. Yeah. I like that.
So, very eager to play. We'll have some videos on that.
And I'll say lastly, the Wii will have its first online game this year, Mario Strikers, which is basically soccer to the extreme. Okay. And I think 2-on-2 is the most you can play right now. But it'll be 2 people on the same Wii versus 2 people on another Wii.
Nice.
Which would be cool. But they got power kicks. Well, apparently you can jack somebody and really follow the crap out of them. And then when they get back up, they get like turtle power shells ups. And power-ups and all that crazy stuff. It very good. The videos I've seen look good.
Very
so
nice.
I'm anxiously waiting that first online title for the Wii.
Cool.
So.
Well, let's move on to martial arts.
We got a lot of shit. We are an hour in of the main show. We got martial arts. Less than halfway, so we're gonna do a video just so you guys know. Welcome, martial arts folks.
Yes.
Welcome. We are going to do a little bit of a video addition to this episode. I have no idea what episode of martial arts we're on.
No idea either.
10, I think.
13, I think.
13, then. That sounds good. That's a good number.
We'll call it 13A because 13 has some.
Right.
You know,
it'll be like the 13th
mojo
to
it.
So.
I have no idea. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, first of all, quick school update. School's
school
going
update.
Really well.
Yes.
Our
four full-time students
are all on track to be testing for the yellow belts very shortly
month or so. What do you think? The next month or so?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, definitely.
When is the gathering?
Oh, yeah. We're having a big... I forgot about that. I was going to mention this. We're having a big martial arts gathering. Memorial Day weekend, May 26th through 28th.
Okay. All
right. So anybody who's listening to this who can get to Grand Rapids, $50 for an entire weekend with some people that will probably blow your mind. And that is cheap as it gets. It's a 4 days worth of craziness for $50. And anybody who does any kind of martial arts seminars knows for a fact that $50 for 4 days of seminar training is a steal. You will not find a deal like that anywhere else.
Yeah.
We got some big names coming in from here in Michigan, some guys coming from California. Silat, some of the archipelago arts. Yep. You know, we're doing stuff from San Yundo.
Kali.
Kali. So we cover the gamut of stuff.
Cool. Awesomeness.
May 29th. Go to the website, www.innovativemartialarts.com. There's information about the gathering, how to get there. You can pay right online now, pay when you get there,
all
however
levels
you want.
And from if you've never done martial arts before to if you are a grandmaster in your style.
Yes.
So anybody is welcome.
Yeah, and I guarantee you'll come away with at least one thing where you went, oh, that's cool.
I guarantee you, you'll come away going, that was definitely worth $50.
Yes.
Yes. You know, even if it's just that one thing. So
yep.
It's worth it. And we do have people that travel from all over the country, and obviously they feel that the airfare is worth the price. So
right.
Good stuff. So my thought was maybe we should... I was thinking about setting up a testing so that the students of ours that want to go to the gathering will go as yellow belts.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Which seems arbitrary to me, and
I don't think so at all.
I don't know if anybody's even going to be wearing belts.
Well, we don't.
Generally, we don't at those at the gatherings, but still.
Yeah.
You know, it's an interesting...
That could be a good idea.
It's a fun story to tell at the gathering as well. You know,
I like that. Well, we'll see what we can do about that then. Yeah. I think our big topic for the day was spurred by Blue Screen Mike, and he asked about guns.
That's right. That's
he asked about guns and if someone who is very into their guns can be considered a martial artist. And I think like anything, it comes down to your purpose and your attitude. If you're just somebody who likes to go out to the range and shoot, then I would say no, you're not a martial artist. You're a gun enthusiast.
Yep.
If you're someone who studies the martial arts and you also study how to... implement the gun in your studies, then yes. Or if that's your primary focus.
Yes.
I mean, I've taught things on the guns. I mean, I guess I don't even necessarily consider myself a gun enthusiast, but the guns are part of my repertoire in martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just as valid as a samurai sword is, as a knife is, as any weapon based on the day and the times and what your society dictates as its current weapon of choice. You know, the gun is a valid weapon for any martial artist. And like anything, you should learn about it. You should know about it. If anything, just to defend against it or know what to do when you come up against one.
Well, and I think one of the interesting aspects of it's a limitation of language. Because the definition of a martial artist is the same definition for artists. Because if I slap some paint on a canvas and throw it on a wall, am I an artist? Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. It would be up to different people to say whether you are or whether you aren't. Is a boxer a martial artist? Well, to some degree, they are combat artists. I mean,
right.
But do they...
It comes down to the individual's day. I mean, you have to ask the boxer. Some boxers may go, yeah, I am a martial artist. Some boxers may go, no, I'm just a boxer.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind of up to them.
Yeah, and I think that, again, it comes back to the word artist, in that the word artist has so many different meanings for so many different people. My personal bent on it is it's someone that is dedicated and focused... and has a commitment to the study of combat science, I guess, for lack of a, you know. That's
right.
The rough approximation. So even somebody, you know, a tactician in the military who studies battles and army simulations and all that, are they a martial artist? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they are. They're doing what, you know, the Japanese shoguns used to do when they studied battle plans.
That's right.
And they were generals. So, yeah, to some degree, they are as well.
Right.
So you don't even have to have the physical aspect of it, in my opinion, to be a martial artist.
No, not at all. Not at all. Well, and I think Mike's big question was, well, it's a projectile. You know, you're dealing with projectiles. Is that considered a martial art?
You're dealing with weapons.
Right. And that's the thing. It's about attitude. You know, it's not about what it, you know, it's not about how the weapon causes its damage or what it does. It's about the attitude you have while you're studying its use.
And as grisly as it sounds, I mean, it's the study of defending and harming others.
Yes.
is really what it comes down to. And so if you have a scientific bent or if defending yourself and harming others is something that you study in a dedicated manner, then in my opinion, you're a martial artist.
Right. Well, and that's what I said, because some people have different opinions. Some people are going to say, well, you're not really a martial artist unless you're studying the mindful part, the body part, and the spiritual part.
And you
take any one of those three out, and now you're just, you know.
Just some guy who likes to shoot stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and maybe to some degree that you're right, but I guess in there I sort of included the mind as well. Because right. if you're a study of that particular thing, if you're a scholar of that thing,
right?
You know, if you like gun history and you understand the mechanics of the weapon and what it can and can't do, and you know you're a student of the gun, then that makes. And I think the spiritual side is up to the individual. You know, that is a very, very personal thing in my opinion. So
right.
I think you can be a martial artist and be completely non-spiritual about it, if you so choose.
No, and I agree with that.
I don't think that's necessarily the best way to go about it. But.
Which is why I said that it's kind of up to the individual. You kind of have to ask them. I don't think you could really look at somebody, watch what they do, and then you get to make the judgment they're a martial artist or not, because it's about their mental attitude inside, which that's stuff you can't see.
And in fact, I would say that there are people that go to martial, quote unquote, martial arts classes that are not as much of martial artists as someone who doesn't go to martial arts class.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, because there are people that have ego problems and discipline problems and don't study and don't have any respect for the things that they are learning and the people that are teaching them.
Right.
And all that, in my opinion, you know, makes you less of a martial artist.
Yes, and I agree with that. So I guess
it was a very interesting idea, in my opinion. And I wanted to make sure that I did want to make sure we talked about it on the podcast, because it was an interesting question more than anything
right.
else.
And I think a lot of people may think, oh, you know, you can run around with a gun, that doesn't make you a martial artist. Not necessarily.
Well, you can run around and punch people, and that doesn't make you a martial artist either.
Exactly. And that's I think that's the bigger point.
Yeah. There was one other thing. Oh, the other thing that I wanted to talk about was I've been having a really interesting debate on the forums at Karate Cafe.
Yes. This is a good topic.
And I do want to say, for any of those guys listening, that I have a tremendous amount of respect for them. I mean, they're dedicated martial artists, and from everything I've heard on the podcast, they really know what they're talking about. But we've been having an interesting debate. And the fact alone that we can have a debate about it, to me, makes a huge, like a lot of people would
that
go,
speaks volumes.
That's bullshit, I disagree with you. And they would never like say, well, this is why I disagree with you, and this is what I think instead of what you think.
Right.
But we were talking about people inventing, quote unquote, inventing styles.
Yes. Which obviously we've had to think a lot about, because
and we have.
Our style is where how that came about.
Right. And I do think I have, to some degree an advantage in the debate, because I have put so much time into thinking about it. And that the general feel on the board was that it seems silly to invent your own style when there are so many out there and so many available. And it made the question made me think about it again. And one of the things that somebody said was, well, there's only so many ways to punch something.
Right.
And I really think what they were talking about was, you know, yes, putting knuckles to face, there's only one way.
You make contact with your fist. That's
Or you don't. Right. There's only two options in there. But how you, the mechanics of doing that, the mechanics of putting knuckles to face are, I would say, almost infinite.
Yes. And there's where the stylistic differences come in.
And that you have one of the things that you've been looking at, which we'll get into in a little bit, is the Salat. Now, how do you pronounce that particular style?
I'm going to have to remember.
Pepe Huaracan?
Pretemperon.
Pertemporon.
Pertemporon. Combat Salat. Salat Pertemporon.
Salat Pertemporon.
Yeah.
One of the things that, and I don't know if it was them or somebody else that you were doing research on, they actually exhale on the retraction of a strike.
Not the retraction. It's like a beat after you would normally exhale.
Okay. So it's
like most people train, punch as I make contact, exhale. Pertemporon is punch, make contact, exhale.
Okay.
So like a beat after.
Right.
I mean, it's a very subtle thing, and I still don't have a good grasp onto
exactly the time.
And my impression is that's the timing. The timing is it's a beat after you normally would, which means you've made the contact already. So it's not breathe on contact; it's breathe just after you've made your contact.
Okay. So one of the reasons that I thought about that is because that to me is a good example of something that I have never thought about before.
Me either.
It has been, and I've done a lot of different styles. It is always breathe out on the strike.
Yep.
Or at most, breathe out on the phrase. If you're throwing multiple strikes, you breathe out during the whole thing.
Right. Well, it's funny. He was very careful not to say, hold your breath.
Right.
He says, maintain your breath. So it's not like you're going, bend that bunchy. And then I go, it's not like that. So it's so hard to describe, but to see him do it, I understand what he's saying. You're not holding your breath, you know?
So I guess what sort of came to the front of my mind when I thought of that is I can think of a lot of different variations of a punch. How many can't I think of?
Right.
Because I bet the ones that I can't think of vastly outnumber the ones that I can think of.
Well, and that's why I say when these guys say that, why not just go pick one of these styles? My thought is, well, then should people stop being creative? What if everybody did that?
Yeah.
You know, before the, I mean, I don't know how many different martial arts there are.
Well, and
but what if there was only half of the martial arts there were today, and everybody said, you know what? From now on, it's illegal to make any new martial arts. You can only study that. What wouldn't we have today in the martial arts if that's the attitude people took?
Well, this is one of the funny things that. And again, I like the forum because it's a real debate, you know. But I got called out because one of the things I said was, well, we'd never have Jeet Kune Do then.
We wouldn't.
Because Bruce Lee, you'd say, well, what's the point in creating a new one? Why don't you just teach Wing Chun? I don't understand what you're getting at.
Yeah.
Although, and this is what I got called out on, was the guy essentially said, well, the difference is, and it's a good point, is that what we're talking about is some guy creating his own martial art. What you're talking about is Bruce Lee creating his own martial art.
But
the difference.
What's the difference?
And I think it's a valid point, is that the difference is that some guy with several years of experience in martial art creating his own system is vastly different than probably, in my opinion, one of the most brilliant martial scientists with a lifetime of experience creating his own martial arts.
Now there's the point. Who gets to decide who gets to make martial arts and who doesn't?
No. And that was my point, but he did make a good point in that the Bruce Lee example was not necessarily the best argument in the world.
Right, but get back to our point, which is what makes a martial art valid?
Right.
Is Jeet Kune Do valid only because Bruce Lee figured it out? What if some guy who only had 2 years of experience figured all that shit out, made the book, you know, the Tao of Jeet Kune Do, did all that stuff, would it be less valid?
The problem comes, and where the forum started, actually, where this posting started, was that they were talking about, I'm going to think of it, Hall of Fame certifications.
Uh-huh.
This guy has the Hall of Fame this guy has the Hall of Fame that, blah, 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 blah. And it's also watered down and becomes meaningless.
Right.
And I agree with that. And it's what the problem is people using those types of things to legitimize their art.
Yes.
And one of the guys on that podcast says, well, the proof is on the mat.
Exactly.
And I kind of agree with and I disagree with some. I think part of it is on the mat.
Right. Well, the thing is, it's one of those things where you have to be the judge. You're going to go in as an individual and look at it, and if you go, this is bullshit, then you leave.
And the problem I have, you know, it's funny because that's one of the things that I've always advised people to do.
I just thought that would be a really bad noise in the middle of your podcast.
It's fine. Yes. All right, we're back.
So
Dan giving the neighbor kids some pop bottles.
Yes. So anyway, the problem with saying to someone that if, you know, go to the school and if you don't like what they're doing, then walk away, is that we forget, because we've been in it so long, that oftentimes you walk into any school, regardless of how bad they are, and look at what they're doing, and it looks amazing, and it's the coolest thing you've ever seen.
Right.
I always tell people, don't emotionally commit to a school for at least 6 months.
Right.
Because I think it takes at least 6 months to really, truly evaluate what's happening in that school. And the more I, and maybe it's a bad example, but the more videos I see on YouTube and stuff like this, the more I realize that there are a lot of really awful martial artists out there. I mean, just people who are horrible. And to me, it feels like they're teaching horrible things as well. It's bizarre.
Well, almost. It reminds me...
And people just get sucked right in.
It reminds me of American Idol. And you watch the auditions.
Yes.
People that come there that think that...
This, they are amazing.
That I am an amazing singer. Just wait until I blow you away. And they get in there and they sing and you're like, oh my God. Yeah. Didn't someone tell them they can't sing?
Yeah. And I've seen, I've been doing a lot of research on the Wing Chun stuff. And I've seen a lot of Wing Chun videos where I'm looking at these guys going, I hope these are a couple of noobs that decided to put a video up on YouTube for the fun of it.
Right.
But they look really, one of them was... this defense against a tie kick, and the first, in my opinion, worst part of it was his opponent just floated this horribly bad looking round kick out there, and the guy quote unquote defended himself against it. It's like, how can anybody be buying into this? But I think a lot of people do because they just don't know.
Well, and it's hard, especially with drills like that. It's like, I want to show you how to do something, but if he's to do it full speed and I'm to do it full speed, you mean it? So we're going to do it slow and we're going to do it this way. And then you look at it.
That caveat.
Right. And then you look at it and go, well, geez, that would never work in a real combat situation.
I think you need to make that caveat. If you put up a video on YouTube that's a drill.
Right.
And we always tell our students as well, like when we're doing a drill, we always say, look, this is to isolate.
Right.
This particular aspect of the movement. This is not the movement that you'd use in combat, but it's this drill is to isolate the technique.
Right.
Or that aspect of the technique. And without that caveat, I don't know, people, it's bad. It's bad.
Some
of the stuff I see out there.
Well, there's so many of them out there, there's bound to be bad ones.
So I do understand the hesitation about saying, look, people can't just invent their own styles.
Right. Hey, and we've thought about that long and hard.
And one of the arguments I made was I gave, you know, Master Pippin's story, where, you know, he started in Taekwondo. He met some people with a little bit more knowledge, started studying in other arts, started incorporating some of those other techniques into Taekwondo because he felt it was important for students to learn.
Right.
And the more he did that, the less and less it looked like Taekwondo.
Yep.
And so what do you do at that point? Do you say, fuck, I guess I just got to start over? Or do you say, I'm just, and he did this for a while, do you just call it combat Taekwondo?
Right.
Well, that's not really honest to your students either, because it's so vastly different than what the Taekwondo started out being that you can't call it that either.
Well, then I guess you maybe have to ask yourself, well, is it up to my students to eventually seek this stuff out for themselves like I did?
Right.
And should I show them or should I? I mean, one of the things I've been reading in this Salat Pertempuran book is he says, look, we've got a lot of things in the system. But a lot of that stuff we leave for self-discovery. We can take these moves even further. But here's the core. We talk about this. Here's the core.
Let's transition above and beyond that. Let's transition, and we'll cover it real quick. Let's talk about the system that you're studying now.
Oh, yeah. So, Salat per Temporan.
Salat per Temporan.
Which is combat Salat. And it's a conglomeration of many different flavors of Salat. There are hundreds of different flavors of Salat, all from the different islands. It's got, you know, and Salat is basically a Mideastern martial art that's got influence of, you know, the archipelagos and all that kind of stuff.
I think that this is one of the misconceptions of amongst many martial artists, is that Salat is like Taekwondo.
Right.
Salat is a genre of styles.
Right.
Salat is akin to kung fu or karate.
Yes.
Where
it's a broader term.
Salat is a broad term for the Middle Eastern arts. India and Pakistan, right, is where sort of its birthplace.
Yeah, but it's got, I mean, influence from the Philippines and the archipelagos and all that. Yeah. There's influence in all that stuff in that general vicinity over there, yes.
So what's per Temporan's, what's the history of that?
I haven't gotten into it enough. The lineage is basically there's four or five different flavors that are the heavy influences for this.
Okay.
And from what I can tell, you know, Sean Stark is you know, the founder of this, and he talks about that. He said, look, you know, he says, I don't want people to think this is a mixed martial art, because it's not. San Yundo is a mixed martial art. It's heavy influences from several different arts.
Right.
Salat per Temporan is all heavy influences from Salat,
right.
Strictly Salat. And I'll be honest, I've gone through some of the stuff just in the first thing, and I'll say particularly the kicks.
Yeah.
Because we study a style that took its kicks from Taekwondo,
right.
And Taekwondo has very good kicks, I look at these kicks and go, why are you doing that?
Right.
You know, they'll do things like when they do their front kick, and the way it's explained in the book is they do this to get some better whipping power, is you hit your knee with your hands as you kick out, and it's supposed to help propel the foot faster and to get a better whipping action.
All right.
And my thought is, but I'm dropping my hands away from my head.
Right.
But then you got to go back to that and go, well, okay, you know, so based on looking at it from a purely Salat perspective, why don't they think about that? There are other reasons. You know, they do that for a reason. Their reason is to propel the kick forward. Do they think, I mean, are you doing something else with your head at the time you're doing it? Because they also have a whole series of evasions that they teach as the core, like the beginning core, you know.
Well, this is another thing I think that is important as a martial artist, especially if you're studying a different style, is that It's generally, you know, especially someone that is into the martial arts and has been for a long time, it's their tendency to question everything.
Yes.
And when learning a new style, you have to be particularly aware of that. And that, you know, some stuff you just have to accept. And you just have to do it because it's part of that style.
Right.
And let it go.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, eventually that stuff you'll figure out for yourself.
Yes.
Either you'll decide it's junk, or you'll go, oh, I just figured out why we do that.
Yes.
You know, and I think that personal exploration in the martial arts is part of it.
I do too.
You can't teach everybody everything, as we've discovered. You have to have your core, and above and beyond, you don't have enough time in your life. To teach someone that stuff in one system, it's not possible.
Yeah.
There are things you have to discover on your own through self-study.
Yes.
And, you know, through all these other independent things and checking out other martial arts, or just studying your own martial art, you know, outside of normal class time.
Yes.
You can't teach all of it in the class. There's too much.
There's too much.
You know?
So anyway, I think we should probably wrap this up. We've been going on and on and on.
Yes. And on.
So,
all right.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
I'm Sterling, and I'm about to go kick Dan's ass.
I'm Sterling, and I'm about to have my ass kicked.
Wait, no, you're Dan. No,
I'm Dan.
Yeah.
Damn it.
And you're about to have your ass kicked.
Okay. That. What he said.
Exactly. All right. Later, everybody.
Licorice is good.